Lying on the couch with a little toe in a splint. Welcome back, everybody, to the Be Better podcast. Once again, I feel like I say this all the time, but we are again back home here in the global world headquarters in South Minneapolis of Final K. Coach Gabby is once again not here. She has actually been fighting some illness, so she is a little bit under the weather. But I pulled an ace card here today, and I brought over not only one of my old friends, but I would say he's a pupil, a young Padawan to my Yoda, Devin Palmer. How are you, man?
Pupil.
Okay, pupil. I prefer Padawan. Actually, it is good. Your haircut is very like... I would say in the second Star Wars, you know, the one where he had the little tail in his hair.
It's very full, very thick.
It is. It's nice. You grow hair very well.
Strong grower. Need a swim cap, though.
Yeah.
I always need a cap.
I don't have that.
Sure don't.
No. Hey, you know, you don't have to be like so snarky about that.
Let's talk about this co-host that you allegedly have.
So, yeah, Gabby, I mean, she was, well, first of all, for the people that don't know you, Devin, you are a...
Big deal.
We're a big deal.
You're the real deal.
You're kind of a washed up deal now, aren't you? I mean, to be honest.
Fully washed up,
has been retired, sort of. Now you're just basically internet trolling people.
I've focused on my specialty.
So you and I have known each other for how long? When did you start? When did we meet?
We met in 2007.
Turtle Man, right? Was that where we kind of discovered you? And I say we as the collective. That was back in the SCS multisport days.
You did not discover me.
No.
You accepted me onto the team, the MJET team, Minnesota
yes.
Junior Elite team.
Worst mistake ever made.
Worst mistake ever. But John Shelp discovered me.
He did. Because that was a Turtle Man though, right?
He and I stayed, our families stayed at the same resort in northern Minnesota, and I recognized him from the Gear West catalog.
Whoa.
And creepily approached him as a 19-year-old. Hello.
Hi.
Hello, adult man.
That's terrible, dude. That's terrible.
It was pretty bad.
That was 2009? That was 07, wasn't it?
I would have met him in the summer of 06.
Oof.
And then we got the team going in 07.
Yeah, because 07 was the first team, but we mm-hmm. did some collective work behind that to get it going. MJETs being the Minnesota Junior Elite team, one of the first original eight junior high-performance teams by USAT. Just you know, ruffling some feathers and just pointing some things out that were there. We were part of a groundbreaking movement back in the day, right?
Batteries Plus.
Batteries Plus bulbs now. You know, got it, Mike Kriego. What would we have done without Mike Kriego? To be honest with you, that dude, like, not only did he fund the team for us, but he did for a long time. And he still does amazing work in support of, like, not only multisport, but mountain biking. Because he and, like, you think about him and his boys, I'm going to say his boys, because, you know, you see Grant and Milner and those guys are still doing, and Dittmer, they're still doing some high-level mountain bike racing. I see them every year up at Lutzen.
He brought dreams to life.
He did. He really helped people kind of get to a certain place. But, you know, we had in those days, you guys walked on the team. Well, didn't walk on the team. You were selected for the team. And you got a bike, uniform, wetsuit. You guys had it made.
We got it pretty good.
At that point, what was it like when somebody said, hey, I want you to do this and I'm going to give you all this stuff?
I was 20 and I thought I was the greatest athlete ever. So I felt very at home being given stuff.
It didn't ruin you though. It didn't take your ego and set it on a course that wasn't going to be corrected. It was
No.
I mean, but as a kid you were definitely, and I wouldn't say just you, but I would say most of the kids that were on that team had some level of attitude, which really kind of was intimidating for me, but it was fun to watch the dynamic between all of you. I mean, when I say all of you, it's like you and Nick and Abby and
is there anyone still going?
Does Try still?
Yeah.
That's a great question. Mike Williams and Ben Trinka, I saw them at Buffalo 2 years ago. They were out racing, but now they're married with kids, and Mike's a doctor. For goodness sakes, you know, and had kids, ruined his life. You know,
everyone's out of the game. So no one who listens to this podcast will have any idea who any of us were.
No. Well, they might. I mean, because now if you think about their like. There is now a bit of historical kind of wraparound, you know, like we've seen the, and we talked about this the other day. And I still call you guys your kids, but like where you guys are now, like when we started out, you guys were all high schoolers, coming into the sport, you're pretty gifted in something. And you all brought in something to the game. Right. And then you've moved on and you found, you know, real grown up jobs and you're doing things, but there's still some sport out there. I think Sarah Daniels is still skiing. I know that Lindsay Marshall is still skiing. I mean, I still coach her actually. She's doing the Berkey this year.
Oh, nice.
But she skied in college though too. Remember? Nope. I don't think Abby is running anymore competitively. Is she?
I have no idea.
No, unless she runs for office. But I don't think journalists run for office. Do they? Normally? When's the last time you heard a journalist run for a public office?
When is the last time?
I can't think of any. I think of... Oh, Jason Lewis. He was a... Is he a journalist, though? He was a radio guy.
Hey, you're verging awfully close to talking about politics right now.
Well, I'm just talking about, like, where things go. I'm not talking about... Okay, so we'll divert from that. But Abby is, like, now she... Because she is writing for Vogue.
I think Vanity Fair.
Vanity Fair, yeah. Yep. That's a little bit... It's one step above, isn't it?
100%.
100% steps above.
She's a regular on TV now.
I saw her on CNN the other day.
It's nuts.
That's really weird to see. But, you know, she's all grown up. We talked about Nick Madrinich, Manwich. You know,
he just played in the Super Bowl.
He didn't play in the Super Bowl. He went to the Super Bowl.
Well, he was in a Rams jersey, so.
Yeah, sorry. That was a bad choice. But he lives in L.A., so he's got no other choice to pick.
He has no other choice.
I mean, it's like you either pick the winning team or whoever's going to lose. Which to the Patriots, like that's the easiest prediction in the world. Everybody saw that coming.
They're good at what they do.
You can't not respect a dynasty like that. All right, so we're getting way off course. So Devin, you started racing with the M-Jets. I think if we had to look at all the athletes that came through, you probably had the most quantified success, would you not say?
100%.
Yeah. So what do you think the reason for that was?
That'd be hard to say. There were a lot of us who had pretty good physical ability from running background or swimming background. There are a lot of us with a lot of talent. It just meant so much to me. I kept pursuing it to the highest level I could.
Why? So what meant the most to you? Was it like the achievement of the sport? And this kind of goes back to, you know, with athletes, we think about what are the motivators for them? Like, is it, you know, completion? Is it to be acknowledged? Is it to win?
I loved winning.
Was it the drive to win?
I loved winning.
Where was your first win?
You remember? I crossed the line first. My first year was 06. I crossed the line first at the St. Paul Sprint, but I did not win.
No?
No. Nope. There were some guys in other waves that smoked me.
Yeah.
But that got me all excited. I think 07 I won that race, the St. Paul Sprint.
Yeah. Would you consider that your hometown race?
It technically was my hometown race.
Yep, because your parents lived relatively close to there, didn't they?
Yep. Yep, Midway area in St. Paul. Yeah.
How are your parents doing? Good?
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Missed the cooking. Missed the post party cookies. So you had skill, but it didn't come easy, right? I mean, I think about you had to work at things and you had kind of been put on a path where success didn't come as a given because you had to work at some stuff. And there were times when I think that you may have taken that for granted and were reminded, but probably drove you a little harder?
Well, I came to the sport with a real chip on my shoulder because I had been very passionate about swimming and running in high school. And then I go to a Big Ten college and there's, you know, the swim coach has no time for, you know, someone of my swimming ability and the run coach, you know, they have clear-cut standards and I'm pretty far from a D1 standard for either of the sports. So I had a lot of attitude because I had such passion for racing Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I had no outlet. So it was after my freshman year of college. I did my first few tries and I saw, okay, I can be actually competitive in this sport.
What did you do? So as a runner and a swimmer, how did the bike come to you? Like, because that, I think, hands down was maybe your strongest event.
Absolutely.
Or discipline in your career. But it's ironic that it was not one of your two kind of, clutch cards coming into it. Because usually that is, like, you think we're talking about Gabby, her clutch cards are swim. And now it's like she's a triple threat.
Yeah, I came in with no experience in cycling, but that physically that's where I ended up being the most talented.
How come?
I got big, beefy gams.
What was your first bike?
I rode a Trek 2100, aluminum frame, carbon fork, maybe Shimano 105, 9-speed.
Nice.
Hot off at eBay for $550.
Where's that bike now?
My brother has it.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know that William rides it, but he's got it.
I was going to say, has he sold it?
He's not right. Well, he has it set up on a trainer, so he could ride it.
Well, that's good.
I mean, yep. It's something.
It's still there. Like, you go back and look at it fondly, like, oh, remember those days?
But have you seen that with athletes where the last sport they pick up ends up being their forte?
I have seen it not on a regular basis. It doesn't surprise me though, especially if it unless it's swimming. Swimming's usually not a harder boat to row because it's so technically driven. It's almost like picking up golf immediately and saying I'm awesome at golf. But with biking, you can train power pretty quick, especially if they're not good at it. But people have to have the physicality of it. You have the physical build for it. Versus like say when Gwen Jorgensen had to, when she took her swim and run background and then had to start becoming a biker, you two, I would arguably say have different physical builds, right? You don't have
We are about as opposite on the physical build spectrum as you can be.
Yeah. I don't think you could have fit into one of her uniforms versus, other uniforms, right?
No, I've always been more of a thick cut athlete.
Well, yeah. And now you are. You weren't always that way. You were thinner-ish.
Thinner-ish.
it has to be something that can be developed with a reasonable amount of physicality. So running, yes, you can teach that. The technique change in running is not as dynamic as a technique change in swimming. Biking, you can make a strong biker simply by putting them with intervals. It's just basic math, really. Where the rub comes down is how they handle the bike. And you probably experienced that. There's a difference between being a strong bike rider and a good bike rider. Meaning you know how to corner, ride crits, not crash, not get caught out somewhere where you don't need to be, making ridiculous pulls that don't need to be made in draft legal, caught off the back in the wrong time in a corner where you have to slinky back up. Those are the things that you can teach, and they're easier to teach than they are like saying, remember to always have an early catch and a solid early vertical forearm. While you have your head down and your butt up and a solid kick and 35% body roll in the water.
Yeah, I think a lot of triathletes struggle on the skill side of the bike.
We're notorious for being terrible bikers.
Well earned.
It is. It's because we try and buy the speed, though. If you think about it, it's because everybody goes for the Ferrari. And this is where you even see kids, or at least you did see kids, like, even when you were starting up and I was going to youth nationals, I remember seeing like a 12-year-old boy, and this was back when youth nationals were at the Wisconsin Dells. They was held in a parking lot.
At the Dells.
Yeah, in a parking lot. Like, just ghetto jankyism at its best, right? So it was like a 12-year-old boy on obviously his mom's like full on carbon TT ride, aero helmet, disc wheel, head 3 in the front. And had no business on that thing.
That just sounds like danger.
Oh, yeah. And the parents are like, glory's forever. Don't give up. Go, go, go. And I was like, this has got to change. Like, this can't be there. And that's where a guy named Alan Leo is another coach out of Colorado. He still actually does he does some coaching, junior coaching and youth coaching. And he and I had once put legislation into USAT to make it so that anyone under the age of 16 was not allowed to compete on anything but a road bike.
Yeah, I could get behind that.
Yeah. The idea is you got to teach them how to ride a bike. You know, so think about all the great cyclists that we have and where have they come up? They've come up in, you know, in mountain bikes, BMX bikes, whatever. It's nobody starts off going, I'm going to ride a TT bike and I'm going to be awesome at it and I'm going to be the best bike rider.
I'm going to go real fast in a straight line.
Exactly. Make no turns. And then as soon as there's wind or there's a crack in the road or something happens, they're out in the weeds. But you get a mountain biker that knows how to go up here, there, and everywhere. They can do whatever they want. You get like somebody like a Peter Sagan who can bunny hop a Fabian Cancellara, you know, in the final 5K of, you know, Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Like literally bunny hopped him as he crashed in front of him. That's not somebody who was starting out as a triathlete. But I think, you know, your development, because you had a short stint in bike racing in college, too, because you raced for the U team, didn't you?
Yeah, I raced with the U of M Cycling Club.
Yeah.
Put in a couple of years there, which was good, but I never progressed. I never got my skill set that high, actually. So I was even in triathlon, I would say I was still a little bit limited on cornering and some of the high-speed descent. A lot of that, I just never got there.
Did you begin to pick races that catered to that skill set or that lack of skill set?
No, I always picked races where I thought I could get. I tried to cherry pick for getting paid, and I just I never picked right.
Yeah. So you became a pro in 2011.
So I started racing in 2006. I got good in 2008. I got real good in 2009. And then I went pro in 2010 and raced pro until 2015.
Okay. And 2009, when you say you got got real good, was that the lifetime year when you won lifetime?
That was the year I won lifetime. I got third at nationals.
Third at nationals, you won a bike?
Yeah, I did win a bike at there.
Did you ever sell that frame?
Sure did.
Oh, boy.
About 6 years later. Sponsor dollars well spent, Blue Cycles.
Exactly. And that was.
Hey, and quick story on business here.
Yeah.
If you're a sponsor in the industry considering sponsoring triathlon, Blue Cycles went big on triathlon and they've been in and out of bankruptcy continuously for the last 10 years. They've been in and out of business.
So what's the moral of that story? Don't sponsor triathlon?
I guess that would be the moral of the story.
But what about other companies that have blossomed from it, like, say, Tier or
Quota?
Huh?
Quota, Norman Stadler's ride from 06. How are they doing these days?
How about Ventum? Ventum just is releasing another brand and is a worldwide growing brand and is now a sponsor of Ironman.
Well, we'll see if they're for sale next year.
I don't think Dia's going to sell them. Do you think it's because when you left triathlon,
yep.
You now are in marketing.
Sure thing. So I left after the 2015 season.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of run out of energy for it.
Okay. So when you say that the businesses that are sponsoring triathlon are making poor marketing choices, my understanding.
Oh, I'm being cheeky over here.
You're trolling the crap out of this. But
I'm being cheeky. Certainly, a lot of people see good results for it.
Did you take some of the things that you saw though, because you were in a unique position to be a sponsor because you were promoting sponsors that were helping you out.
QR
was helping you out. Tier was helping you out. There was a unknown reseller of used precious metals that was helping you out. But did you have a unique? Did your unique position to see what they were and were not doing either for you or for the sport? Did that help you in what you're doing now?
I picked up my interest in marketing midway through my pro career because I realized I had this roster of sponsors and I wanted to do more for them. But when you only race 8 to 12 times a year, well, what does that really do for someone if you're only representing them, you know, 10 times in a calendar year? So I realized, okay, let's get creative. Let's look at other options to create energy or interest around their brand name.
And what are some of those options? Is it changing you, or is it changing the scenario?
Oh, well, it's creating events. And I'm a big fan of Bill Veeck, the guy from the, he did the disco night at a ballpark where they blew up a bunch of disco records and caused a riot.
Is that Wrigley Field when they were? Yeah.
So he's a nut from Chicago, and he was a big part of my journey in the early days. Like, okay, let's just be interesting. Let's do some silly nonsense, and it doesn't have to be focused around a triathlon race. You know, if the brand, like I worked with Peace Coffee for a lot of years, like, okay, there's no reason my representation of them has to just be at a triathlon. Mm-hmm. I can create an event of my own and find a reason to talk about Peace Coffee.
Be quirky. So you saw being a disruptor in a pretty regulated industry as being an advantage.
Oh, absolutely.
Have you carried that forward in what you're doing now? Because obviously you're not selling Peace Coffee. You're repping like legitimate regular brands now.
Regular businesses. Yeah. Well, Peace Coffee is a real business, legit brand.
Well, so you know what I mean.
So my firm now, Anderson Palmer.
Your firm.
My firm. Hmm. I'm the Palmer and Anderson Palmer.
That's good.
Yeah, we do digital marketing for local small businesses. Hmm. So I'll build you a new website, I'll set up your Google ads, and I'll run your social media for you and do social media campaigns. So a lot of the creativity and energy that I learned in triathlon is still what I use as part of my approach now. But when I'm representing a brand online, speaking on their behalf, it has to be, I can't just be my regular old cheeky self. Mm-hmm. I try and speak in a voice that's appropriate to represent them.
Have you, so that's interesting because, you know, social media can be such a pitfall, and it lasts forever. Like the things that you have posted, they don't go away if you take them down. And we've seen that, you know, from a number of different places. Have you...
Oh, people are getting in trouble left and right out there.
Oh, absolutely. Have you found that any of the things that you have done in the past that you consider cheeky, and I made air quotes there for the people that aren't sitting right here in the headquarters, have you found that any of those have come back to haunt you? That you said, I really wish I wouldn't have done that. I thought it was funny. That didn't turn out great for me later on.
It happens. Like if you're gonna do anything that's strong enough to entertain or amuse someone might be offended.
So if you're gonna be avant-garde or a disruptor, you have to be willing to live with the consequences that you're not playing in a safe realm.
And I accept, like, if you're gonna take a certain attitude or position or say something, if you're willing to say something bold, you're gonna have X% of people who don't care for what you've said.
Yeah.
And so with that mentality, I'm always receptive to feedback. So if I goof on a friend and make a little comment on something, and they communicate back to me like, "Hey, not cool. That hurt my feelings," or I didn't like that joke. You know, I'm always willing to apologize, take down the comment. You know, it's just kind of, I understand it as a risk of trolling.
Risk of trolling. And you were like, when you started out, that was kind of like the early days or the beginning of of TRS. You know, when the real Starkey was actually a trolling, like, he wasn't a bot, he was actually an individual.
So the real Starkey, parody account of Andrew Starkwitz, one of the most hilarious male pros.
And that started out, I think, when was that?
Is this around 2012 he started?
Something like
12
that.
Or 13.
But being a parody account, it was one of the first, like, maybe one of the first triathlon parody accounts, but there wasn't a lot of parody accounts that I was aware of or following back then.
It delighted me because triathlon is so dry.
Yep.
It just delighted me that this guy was being a real jerk.
Because, to be honest, for those that don't know, Andrew Starkwitz is not that person. He is about as...
Well,
like...
Andrew is a pro from Chicago, beast on the bike, and Andrew's willing to say bold things. So Andrew is a big personality in the sport, and he's willing to say things with a lot of clarity that do offend a lot of people. But the parody account kind of took his bold Chicago voice and just started saying much spicier things.
Would you say he macked it?
A little bit. And it just, he would tease people in a way no one else was, and it just really delighted me. So immediately I loved the account, and I reached out to whoever was running it, and I wanted to do an interview with them on in the parody voice. I wanted to interview them on my little blog.
Yeah.
And we did the interview, and it was delightfully hilarious. And he was like, well, he was smart enough to say, okay, Devin's blog probably gets read by about 8 people in Minnesota. So
yep.
Let me see if I can get this published somewhere. So he actually got it published on Slow Twitch.
So your interview with him was...
I'm a published author. I've been published on slowtwitch.com.
You and Dan Epfield are like this now, huh?
We are not. We are not. So it was he brought Herbert Crable into the conversation to get it published.
Herbert Crable?
He has no hair and kind of hangs out somewhere in one of the Carolinas.
Who is Herbert Crable?
He's one of the Slow Twitch guys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the one who asked a lady, are you going to keep that kid or what?
What?
That's Herbert. He got in a whole lot of hot water one day.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So he added on a couple generic Slow Twitch questions, called himself a co-author, and then published my interview.
Without you giving you credit?
No, he gave me credit. Unfortunately, everyone thought, because he titled it, whatever interview with the real Starkey, and then by Devin Palmer and Herbert Crable.
And, oh, he put himself in the byline.
He put himself in the byline, but then everyone thought it was just published as I was the real Starkey. So it really took the wind out of the sails. It really bummed me out.
You mean people, did people question that they actually thought you
they,
were?
Well, they just assumed like, oh yeah, well, you know, I was all cranky, but it was a hilarious, you know, cause I loved what the account was doing and, you know, we had a good rapport. And so, he eventually got found out. It's just some husky guy down in Texas.
So it was a 400-pound guy.
Oh, I think he's maybe 280, 290. He might be a little over 3 bills.
Now, did he
His name's Ben Hobbs.
Ben Hobbs?
Hobbs. 300 pounds, maybe?
Have you met him before?
No.
Oh. Have you talked since?
We just on the internet teasing one another.
Gotcha.
I went through a long, maybe 2 years of just kind of calling him Husky for no reason on Twitter.
Did he actually get found out, or did he kind of get frustrated that he wasn't getting credit and he outed himself?
Oh, that's a good question. I forget the exactly how it happened. He had a whole day where he had everyone claim to be the account. So he got dozens of,
I remember that day.
Yep. Goofy people on the internet to say, I'm the real Starkey.
Uh-huh. I think I actually even questioned you whether you were. And I think that was around the time when I was going to get you a hat that said, remember I texted you a photo of I'm the real Starkey.
Oh,
yeah. Conan, you're like, yeah, that was so 2 weeks ago.
But it's so funny that one goofy guy who's willing to say some spicy stuff on the internet can make himself a mini celebrity in our sport.
Yeah, he did. He shook it up. And you're right. We are a sport that doesn't have a lot of that shakeup. You know, like I think the biggest thing we've had since before that was, I mean, there wasn't a lot. I mean, you saw some battles, you know, I mean, even the Mark Allen, Dave Scott stuff was kind of meh. It wasn't, spicy.
They just want to smash each other on the course. They don't.
Yeah. I mean, Tim DeBoom and Peter Reed never really said anything bad against each other.
No one knows how to talk spicy in that sport.
You need some foreigners to get in there. Cause I think back to the Macca Stadler, almost fight at the disco after Kona, when Macca dropped out and Stadler won, and Mac's like, I could have won.
Well, Mac has got such a big person, you know, he's a genuine big personality.
Yeah.
But I feel like Norman is just kind of a serious dude.
But he almost became his own parody. And I mean, maybe much to his, like, to his
do
own.
Do people know who Norman Stadler is anymore?
Stadler? Well, I think all you have to say is, how much tire do you lose on the
How much glue on a tire? How much glue on a tire?
Another flat. Like his, those like little captions from that year at Ironman, if they were to happen today, it would be meme town. I mean, just think of the memes and GIFs that would come from those. Like, it'd be epic. But yeah, you're right. I don't think anybody really remembers. And you know, for like the real Starkey, once he came out, did that kind of take the wind out of the sails of what he was able to accomplish, since everybody kind of knew who he was?
No, he was an entrepreneurial fella. So he got a podcast going. He got...
Podcasts are way overrated.
Real overrated. He did a website. So he tried all these different ventures. And, you know, he lost steam on some of them because he just wasn't seeing, you know, he was looking like, okay, I'm a business guy. Can I make some money off this? And, you know, he wasn't seeing a big return.
Yeah.
So he lost some steam because he's, you know, he's a normal guy with a kiddo to raise and everything. So he just had, you know, he had to put his career and family first over triathlon entertainment.
What would you have done differently if you were him?
If
let's say you were Hobbs, right? And yep. You had started that parody account and you were going to say, I want to maximize this. I want to stay snarky, but I want to try and make some bank off of this. I want to try and really run this thing to the end. What would you have done differently that he didn't do?
Well, it's tough because he's not actually in the industry, so he doesn't, you know, if he has a good platform where he's getting attention, he doesn't necessarily have something in the industry he can be driving traffic to where he would actually be doing business.
So he didn't have a product.
He didn't, you know, he's not running a coaching company, you know, he's not selling a product. He did have a team at some point, you know, for age group folks.
So he was selling jerseys or shirts and swag, wasn't it? Like,
but I think when you add up the work versus, you know, what you get out of it.
It's not like a company.
Yep.
So not having something to shill is a big miss. How did he find, like, was he a triathlete?
He had, you know, he's like a casual triathlete. I think he'd done a couple of Ironmans. And I don't know what got him to do it. I don't know if it just Andrew Starkwitz's genuine boldness was like, oh, I gotta do something because this is the most interesting pro in the sport.
He probably slighted him at a race at some point. It's like, Andrew.
Oh,
Andrew.
No, he loves Andrew.
Really?
Yeah, Andrew's the man.
Did he ever like get an interview with him, like for a real
interview? They have done interviews on the podcast and they've humanly met in person.
Yep. That's good to know because that needs to happen at some point in time.
I almost met Ben Hobbs at Ironman Texas in 2015. I was working for Ken Glaw's travel company, Endurance Sports Travel. I was down there, and I met his posse, his little underlings, Aaron Webstee from Canada and Dark Mark from New York.
Dark Mark.
I met the boys, but Ben was too hungover, and he was. It was the race day, and Ben was hungover, sleeping in the hotel room. Missed opportunity.
So close for a brush with fame. That would have been so good.
I think my biggest brush with fame was maybe 2008. You were at the Olympic Training Center doing something or other. You always are. And you meet my prospective girlfriend, Jasmine Onick. Oh,
remember you got her, that?
You got her to call me.
I did.
I don't remember what I said, but it was real awkward. I don't think I was super charismatic with her, but she said, hi, Chris is here, and he says, you like me.
It was from the pool deck. I remember that. I remember we were swimming.
Jazz.
Because we followed that up down in Tuscaloosa that year, didn't we?
Yeah, we sure did.
When she won the national championship and you guys used electrical tape and wrote Go Jazz on your bellies.
Yeah, we spelled out her name. We went all the way for her. And you know what she did?
She signed the photo of that.
She won the race.
Well, she did. She was a national champion, which kind of like, you know, but then she went off the grid. I see her.
Yeah, I think she pursued a regular adult life.
Yeah, she just became a regular grown-up. But if I remember, do you still have the photo of that? Because her parents took the photo of you guys, and then I got her to sign them, and I sent them, like, cause it was you and Manny and Heine, wasn't
nope.
it? And do you still have the photo somewhere?
I've got it somewhere, I'm sure.
Oh, I would love to see that somewhere. That's got to be a throwback Jazz. Thursday. Go Jazz! That was an epic day. That was so fun. Was that our first trip to Tuscaloosa?
I think it was the second.
Second one.
We went down. You found some random race in the springtime. We went down for, and then we went down some other year.
It was a draft legal
for
race.
Nationals. Yeah, random race.
Random race in random Tuscaloosa, race. Beautiful town. Tuscaloosa. Driving all the way through there in that white van with Shelp. Didn't Shelp go with us?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I still have Facebook photos. Those might have been my first Facebook photos.
Those parents sent their sweet baby children.
Oh my gosh!
Across state lines with you.
Why? That's just, yeah. That was ill-advised. Where did we stay when we were there?
Wasn't it just a regular hotel? I forget the.
Yeah, I think we stayed.
You didn't find some cheap dorms or anything. I think it was just a regular old hotel.
Just a regular old hotel. Because then the second year we went, we stayed in another hotel. But we drove a minivan down there, I think, didn't we? Because I remember driving into Tuscaloosa that morning. I was like half asleep, just trying to barely eke it to the hotel so I could just pass it off to the Madriniches, who would like said they would take care of me. Mrs. Madrinich had like, you know, fresh fruit and stuff cut up, and you know, the angel that she is.
Parents.
Oh, Manny's mom. Parents are the best. Oh, Pauline, she's such a doll.
What's been happening in the sports? So I quit.
You quit?
Hard stop after 2015.
Did being a pro ruin you?
It did. So I raced one more year. I stopped being a pro after 2014, and I raced 2015. Just raced, you know, as a regular civilian. And
Civilian. As an age grouper.
I had lost a little bit of the passion, so I didn't take a ton of joy in it. So I just said, let's do something else for 2016.
Yeah, I've heard that it can definitely burn you out unless you have some different focus in it or some reason. Oh. And trying to find a job in it can be difficult.
Oh, pretty tricky. I would have been a lot happier. I could have probably kept racing as a pro if I had been more prudent in two ways. If I had found myself a part-time job.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have something to do.
But were you working at Gear West at the time, were you?
No. I worked at Gear West only through 2011 or so.
Oh, okay.
So I was always doing stuff here and there. Like I coached high school swimming and I was coaching triathletes, obviously. But if I had had, knowing what I know now about the joys of having a job,
mm-hmm.
if I had a nice 4 to 6 hour a day job, maybe even a full-time job, just a regular job to kind of ground myself, somewhere to go, people to see, income coming in, that would have brought a lot of stability to my life versus literally just training, sitting on the couch, training again, sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
Because it's such a weird, isolating lifestyle. And I could have been more prudent. I could have been more aggressive about finding more training partners who had a flexible schedule. But I just didn't. I ended up training a lot and alone. And it got just real lonely.
Yeah. Because you, like, I remember you trained with David every once in a while.
Oh, it's hunting down David is like, it's impossible.
Which I heard that he's back in the military.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Out in the East Coast. Jared talked about that.
Yeah. I haven't been in touch with David in a couple of years.
Yeah. I see him racing randomly with Lars Van Anger every once in a while, like over in Europe. What's that swim?
Otillo?
Is that what that is?
The swim run thing.
Yeah.
That's big now.
Which the rumors has that that's coming here to Minneapolis, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah. Ooh. But it's going to be the Otillo of the... And this is why it would be epic. Chain of lakes. So imagine starting up by like, you know, Cedar or Isles, mm-hmm. and then ending here at Nokomis. Swimming the lakes and running in between them. That would be baller epic.
Best wishes getting the permits for that.
Yep,
that's good true.
Good luck with the city.
Yep.
Yeah, you're not going to get that... Yeah, it's not going to happen. But you know, there's no road closures. There's no bike. You're basically running. You could run on the path in between. All you need is to have lifeguards in the water. There's no transition areas. You're carrying everything with you.
Just do it as a bandit race.
Oh,
see what happens.
Wouldn't that be
great?
See
what happens.
We should do that someday.
What's the fine? What's the ticket if you get caught swimming across one of the lakes?
It was $175 last time I saw. I used to do it all the time. I used to get up at like, you know, and be in the water at 6 a.m. on Calhoun, swimming from Thompson Beach.
Would you pull the I'm a former cop card to get out of the ticket?
I was pulling the I am an active cop card at that point in time. Until one day I actually got, the last time I did it was Channel 9 was doing some morning webcast, and they actually had, they were filming me, and they were swimming across the lake. And so when I got done, somebody's like, hey, dude, you were on Channel 9. And I'm like, what? And I went back and they had actually like, you know, like in the bumper stuff where they have the like the bumper images, it was me swimming across the lake in a sunrise.
Swimming illegally.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I better stop this. Because, yeah, it's who would have known? It's like it's actually swimming outside the buoys is a finable offense.
Federal offense, I think.
It's like it's a lake. It's swimming. Whatever. I don't get it. I think it's stupid. So what's going on in triathlon these days?
Yeah, what's new?
I think the movement towards draft legal.
For regular folks?
For regular folks. You're finally starting to...
First of all, okay, let's break that down.
Yeah.
The average triathlete hates swimming and is no good at it.
Well, you're making this claim based off of
triathletes meeting and knowing triathletes for a decade.
Okay.
They also don't know how to turn their bicycles.
True. Many of them.
And they've never ridden with anyone in their life before.
Yeah, group riding is
so draft legal, which heavily favors swimming. Swimming is a much bigger factor in draft legal.
Mm-hmm.
They hate that. And then the whole ride, instead of going in a straight line fast, like they like to do, like I like to do.
Yeah.
I'm no good at turning either. I'm not saying I'm good at turning. They're riding with people, which makes them stressed out.
Yep.
And they can't turn.
So what are some of the reasons that it would be a good idea? Let me outline those. Number one is it is the Olympic version of the sport, which is the global version of or what needs to be rolled out across the globe, what everybody sees it outside of Ironman. So it has some sort of standardization there. Two, it is if you're looking at a scalable model of how triathlon can be, especially in growing metropolises and with the cost of events and road closures, I think it becomes a more scalable model. It's a smaller event, smaller footprint, and it's something that I think is eventually becomes a safer piece because with draft legal, the roads have to be closed. And with open roads, with distracted drivers, it becomes a safer element for pretty much everybody. It's a little bit more dynamic to set up from a race director standpoint, but it's a smaller footprint. So if you think about the Claremont race, that happens in a state park, right?
Do you have to start staggering the entire event? So age groups are completing their whole race, and then the next wave goes.
You do. You have to because you can't put. 400 people onto a race course. It has to be limited to a certain amount. And so we've been doing this, and where I've seen it happen is down in Sarasota. Sarasota's got a great draft legal event that is open to age groupers. And it's nice because it's pretty encapsulated into a small venue. It's where they do the rowing championships for the World Rowing Championships. So the lake is man-made. There's a great run venue right there with their trail system, and then basically the ring around is almost a perfect 5K. So it would be much like if you put maybe a couple of in and outs onto around Nokomis.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a great draft legal area. If you could do a couple of kind of janky little ups and backs to make a couple of turns, and you probably do that on the bridges, where if you think about it, you almost make like a figure eight. So as you're coming, let's say counterclockwise around Nokomis, and you go south on Cedar, make a 180 degree U-turn halfway before you get to the other side, like Fat Lorenzo's, come back. Those could be a couple of quick turns, and then make that I think that could be a fun draft legal area. The problem is that it's expensive, and you have to get a number of athletes. So it's kind of like a build it and they will come belief.
And you, in your heart of hearts, you think that's where the sport is going for the regular man, the everyman?
Well, it's not being driven by the Americans are not saying this is what has to happen. This is being driven by international because the ITU at ITU Worlds has said we're going to draft legal format, and they are this coming year. They're going sprint, so draft legal sprint. So if you're going to race sprint worlds in Switzerland, you have to race draft legal. So number one, how do you start qualifying for that? And USIT has been trying to work that out, and they've been doing it in a number of different locations, smaller, not at age group national championships, but in other smaller venues. And it does take a longer time throughout the day. So you're, instead of starting at 6 a.m., you might have to start at 1 p.m. or 4:30 p.m. And that's, you're dealing with like timelines with volunteers. There's a lot of things that have to work inside there. Are athletes going to buy into it? I think at some point they do, because I think it creates some sort of different challenge inside the race. How many people do you know that are our age or have had the time in the sport that we have and have said, yeah, I'm kind of burnt out on it. Same old race, same format, blah, blah, blah. Well, what if you mixed it up? What are some of the reasons people are going to do these, these dirty races or the
swim run type?
Because it's something different. They have the same elements based in there, but it's something different. It's changing. It's not like, you know, it's no longer saying I'm going to do something because it's longer. Iron Man's already been done. You know, everybody has done that. And I think you're seeing even Iron Man come back on that. And, you know, at one point in time, Iron Man tried to say that, you know, tried to make it so that they were what the sport was. And I think even they at this point in time, if you talk to Andrew Messick, he might even acknowledge the fact that they may have tried to own the sport too much and to the detriment of the sport itself, because you have to have all the other smaller events to support the big event. And so I think if you're looking to challenge people, it's not going to replace it. It's not going to fully replace draft or non-drafting. You're always going to have that. But I do think that it is going to grow and grow and grow and be more of a presence, but I don't think it'll replace fully non-draft legal racing.
How many of the triathlon events we got going here in Minnesota, and we always have a good number, how many are draft legal?
I don't think there are any draft legal.
Oh.
The only draft legal races that have ever been put on here were by this guy, me.
Chris Worthout.
Yeah, do you remember? You raced it.
Which?
Eli Hemming won the race.
Which race was that? What year was that?
Would have been 2010. Manitou.
Manitou draft. I think it was just draft legal for, that was like a subset of the race.
For the juniors, yeah, it was a junior draft legal race. But it's the only draft legal race we've had here. I've proposed them. I actually have put together the proposal down for one in Edina, which would have taken place right near their public pool down by Southdale.
Okay.
So it would have been a pool swim, would have been a great pool swim. And they have a pretty closed off area that we could have made a super tight micro course, which I think would have been fun. Multiple laps, relays would have been great. And that's a whole other thing too. Relays. The relays are another place where people might, not the traditional, I'm going to do the swim, you do the bike, this guy's going to do the run or gal. Where I'm going to do swim, bike, run real short, and then I'm going to tag off, and the next person's going to do swim, bike, run real short. I think that's also another thing that can be growing in the future that I would love to produce. But I feel like at some point in time, these don't make money right off the bat.
Nope.
We're losing a lot of races as it is because the companies that are producing races are money making companies, and they have to produce that. Also, much to your earlier point, sponsorship has been hard, if not impossible, to get outside of a few key demographics. Triathlon stores, bike shops. Outside of that, if you're a triathlon race director, you're leveraging every personal relationship you have to try and get them to sponsor the race to make it float. You know, I think about Maple Grove. The costs to produce Maple Grove, because it is inside, and I'm just me and Frank doing it. We don't have a company that we can write it all off as, you know, marketing. It's astronomically expensive to produce and have it be safe. We could do it, but you would sacrifice safety. I mean, for instance, it's $10,000 just for the warning light signs and all the traffic control. You know, it's another, you know, $8,000 for the cops. I mean, those are expensive things to come over. So without support from larger companies or the city of Maple Grove itself, which is hopefully going to come on board at some point in time, which you've been trying to appeal to, the race is not sustainable. A Lifetime can keep a sustainable race in Minneapolis. They've pared it down quite a bit from what it was, the Lifetime Try, but they can do that because they have big coffers. They have other things they're bringing in. They can bring in larger sponsorships, but you've seen that series go away a little bit. Toyota has moved away from that series. Now they're back. Toyota's back in the game.
Are they?
Yeah, they're the main title sponsor, car sponsor for the USA Triathlon National Triathlon Series.
Okay.
So all the regional championships, the national championships, they're one of the main title sponsors. So Toyota is still back in the game to try and court triathletes, which I think, you know, Subaru was there for a while, then they kind of backed out a little bit. But it's, you know, you still have people trying to push into that market. You have companies that are not traditionally there also helping, like Roka, you know, came in. You talk about being a disruptor in how that was, you know, that was key in, you know, kind of creating a kerfuffle in your marketing scheme. That's how Roka was. You know, Roka came in and they don't sell wetsuits in stores. So they're not
or
selling
they direct
stores.
To consumer?
Direct to consumer.
Oh, I didn't know
much
that.
Much like Canyon.
Yeah.
You know, Canyon Bicycles. Canyon Bicycles is, you know, that's they're relatively unique in that respect. You're not going to go to a store and buy a Canyon. You're going to buy it online. And so is that good? Is that they have to do different things. So so I think that that triathlon can remain I think a vital aspect of what we do, but there needs to be some change. There needs to be some modification. You can't fall back on expecting to produce the same product and have everybody buy it the same. Even McDonald's changes their wrappers, you know.
So from what you just told me, and you're running the Maple Grove Tri, commercial enterprise. You're not doing it as a charity.
Nope.
Sounds like you need a digital marketing partner. Someone to set up some maybe Google ads for you.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a little Facebook campaign for you.
Sounds like maybe a pro bono thing you could do to try and bluster your resume to say, I've been involved with this. Maybe there is some quid pro quo.
We'll have to negotiate off air. I'm trying to get a client over here, and you're trying to get some charity out of me.
You could build your portfolio. You could say, look what I did. I'm trying to help you out, Devin.
Well, okay. Now you're
once again, all of the things I've given you in your world, you're still trying to squeeze this lemon for more juice.
I'm a pupil.
Exactly.
Now, you've just told me the future of the sport is draft legal. And you are running a triathlon as a commercial enterprise.
Yep.
Not draft legal.
Exactly. Not for the lack of trying, though. Like I outlined, I've tried to, number one, I have done it. Two, I've tried to find other ones. But in order to do it correctly, in order to make it financially viable, you're going to have to loop in kids at some point in time.
I'm smirking at Chris right now because I got him in a checkmate on that.
You do. He's got me in a box. I'm totally in a box. I produce one race. I do it. I walked into it with a friend of mine who was once my boss and now he's my friend. And we do it because we enjoy doing it. It's become a bit more of a business and more challenging than we had originally thought it would be because we've done a number of different races before. But if I didn't have other things to sustain me, now you talk about like you have a grown-up job. This is my grown-up job.
Yep.
You know, I work 3 hours a day.
But per our conversation about Ben Hobbs, you know, he had this platform, but he didn't necessarily have something to drive it to. Mm-hmm. Maple Grove Tri, even if you invest a lot of time and it doesn't net you a ton of money, it's still a great platform for you to drive traffic to Final K, your coaching business.
Coaching or, you know, anything else. You know, it does because coaching has always been and always will be my keystone. But it doesn't pay the bills. And I could try and make it pay the bills and push that metric and watch things kind of fall along the wayside. Much like how when we were at Optum Health Performance, we were forced to try and make coaching pay the bills, and you saw the things that really were pitfalls. I think you had to have too many clients, you had to have too many coaches, and the product became too financially based. That's where Final K changed the game. That's where I made changes. I said, okay, it's not going to be about the coaches making money. It's about the coaches doing the craft. And that's really what I've tried to do is I've tried to say, do this. But it's all side hustle. So when I go and teach for USAT, you know, I go teach coaching clinics or I announce races for, you know, for Lifetime or, you know, when I write a book that sells 4 copies every 10 years.
Yeah, how many sales are we up to on your book?
My parents bought many copies.
Awesome.
But those all sustain the coaching. So you have multiple silos of income, and I learned diversification in income very early in the game. And I once read that the average millionaire or person who earns $1 million a year more has on average 5 lines of income coming in, not just one singular one. So it's rare to have one person making, you know, a crap ton of money, $1 million, and it's only coming in one location. Whereas me, I diversify, but it also has allowed me to do a number of things. Number one, live a lifestyle that is very lackadaisical.
Number two, and this is most important, you go to Miami like 8 times a year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Like, you know, it's actually pronounced Miami.
Miami.
Yeah. And now it's the Bahamas. So, you know, because we're doing the Bahamas camp.
Oh, that's right.
And, you know, we're looking, and I'm also in negotiations with the Challenge family of races to produce a Challenge family race in the Bahamas in 2020, which would be pretty cool.
I did Challenge Aarhus in Denmark in 2011.
There you go. So this will be just like that, except better, except just for like the Bahamas. A lot warmer. But it really has allowed me to, you know, doing all these things has allowed me to be able to just be a little bit more free. Now, also, it'd be foolish of me not to acknowledge the fact that, you know, I married a woman who has an incredibly, you know, gracious heart, allows me to do the things that I do, makes a wonderful income, and has, you know, has the more traditionally male role in our family. I take care of the kids and I take care of her, and, you know, I gladly accept that. But
hey, shout out to Jill. Okay.
Big shout out to Jill.
Big shout out to Jill. And you know what? Furthermore, shout out to Thea, my wife.
Exactly. You married it. You married
her. Sure did. Nurse practitioner, baby.
Yeah. See, I taught you
Chris,
well.
Chris, I love her so much.
I know you do. I know you do. But that, so if you've never learned anything from me, or never are willing to admit that you've ever learned anything from me, I would say maybe that's one thing that I've taught you.
That would probably be the biggest life lesson.
That would be how to marry up.
Young Padawan.
How to marry up and not have a real job.
You're looking for a powerful woman to marry.
Mm-hmm.
With a big, strong, stable income.
Who's willing to put up with your BS. And your...
Thea put up with my entire pro triathlon career.
Oh, my goodness. How and why, I don't know. Because you brought in negative...
$22,000, and I spent 11 of it on the sport.
Oh, my goodness. Terrible. Well, it's good to know that you have landed in a good spot, that you have learned a lot of good life lessons. And I think I think there's a lot of things that you have that are in your future that are bright. To kind of bring it full circle, I've always felt as if I've been sort of a not of a father figure.
You did once say that, and I found it very uncomfortable because I said, Chris, well, I have a father.
You have, but I mean, you have a history of seeking out older men and looking for their approval.
Well, no, that's a different conversation.
It's so true.
That's a different conversation.
I've tried to steer you and pass things down, and I've always reveled in your accomplishments. I mean, one of my favorite photos is, I think, the photo of the day you won Lifetime.
After Lifetime, that was...
There was,
because you were announcing that day?
I was announcing that day. And
so to have you on the call, that was such a cool day.
And it was... There was such genuine joy there. And it was... It's always been a point of pride to see, you know, what you've done. Like a dad, I've not always... And I'm not your dad, obviously.
to be clear, weird
uncle, yeah. I mean, there's things that you've done that I've not thought were awesome, you know? But there is a far more things that I've thought, yeah, that's a good kid. And I feel very joyous in the fact that the woman you chose to marry lives right around the corner from us, and we still get to see each other quite often. And you know, our annual Nook dinners are something I really look forward to every November.
So it's an awesome tradition.
It is. Devin, I can't thank you enough for coming up here and reminiscing.
Well, now, hold on.
What do you mean?
Let me get my plugs in here.
Okay.
You're trying to wrap up on me, and
I'm trying to wrap
my
up.
Plugs
didn't you,
out.
Didn't you plug in? So
now, Anderson Palmer. I'm the Palmer and Anderson Palmer.
Okay.
I'll build your website. I'll set up your Google ads. I'll do your social media campaigns, Facebook, LinkedIn. People got to get a little more on board with LinkedIn. You can do some boosting on LinkedIn. They'll blow your socks off. If you're a B2B, you're selling stuff to other businesses,
yep.
LinkedIn, there's a lot of potential there. And I recently have become a licensed realtor through Edina Realty.
What?
Yeah, so I'm slinging houses.
Wow, you are gotten the hustle.
Yeah. Going. And you know what else I'm doing?
Baking?
I've got one coached athlete left.
What?
One holdover from my coaching business, keeping it alive.
Who are you coaching?
My boy, Ben Tram. He's the man.
Oh, I thought you were going to say W.
No, no, no. No, no, no. He fired me long ago. No, no, no. So you're speaking of income streams, and I got three going right now.
That's good.
Yeah. So if you're looking to And I think we discussed this. You're ready to sell this house and move to Plymouth.
No.
Nice five bed, five bath.
No.
Yeah, let's make that. I'll sell this house. I'll be your buyer's agent on the other side.
You got it. You got me covered going, coming and going.
In and out. Let's do it.
That's good. And so how could somebody reach you if they wanted to, either number one, hire you as a mediocre marginal coach, have you as a baller realtor, or have you blow up their Twitter account?
Now, it's important to note, if you come to me saying I'm shopping you against Final K, I will undercut Final K by whatever margin it takes to get your business.
Jerk.
So whatever your prices are, I'm willing to go whatever it takes, $5 less.
Okay. So knowing that right off the bat. But if somebody wants, like, because I think the
My website is AndersonPalmer.com. Yep. You can reach me, Devon, D-E-V-O-N, not I. Do not spell it with an I. Devon, D-E-V-O-N, at AndersonPalmer.com is my email. You can always reach me on social media. I'm D Palmer Trolls on Instagram and Twitter, and I'm just Devon Palmer on Facebook. And Anderson Palmer, of course, has a Facebook page as well.
Gotcha. And if you're out there, if you're looking, he knows his stuff. I mean, Devon, you've been in the game from Jump Street on this thing, and I think
I'll be the most fun digital marketing consultant you ever work with.
Have no fears. He'll take you to the next level. That's good. Devon, thanks for coming over, man.
Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Right. Well, we're going to wrap up another epic episode here. We'll have to have you back again sometime, Devon, and we'll chat about more things.
Well, we'll see what happens with this alleged co-host of yours.
Gabby comes back.
I'm not saying I'm taking her job.
You might arm wrestle her. Well, you guys should have a swim off. I think she'd. We'll see how that goes.
I haven't been in
a
pool in 2 years.
Or
so
you guys could run around the lake for it. We could do that. That'd be fun. That'd be fun to see. But hopefully Gabby will be back next time with us. But until then, make sure you check out our subscriptions on iTunes. You can get that at the bottom here. And check out some of our past episodes. We got quite a quiver of good past co-hosts and also guests. So until next time, I'm Coach Chris for Devon Palmer. And we'll see you. Be better. Bye.